gentlemen, and thank you to Nicholas for hosting another wonderful forum as always. I'm delighted to be here in Cyprus today to moderate this panel on optimizing ship management, balancing safety, innovation, sustainability, regulation, and trade dynamics. As we all know, we're living in a period of great uncertainty, and for the maritime industry, even more specifically, this is time of great change with a number of choices and also a number of significant decision-making. The geopolitical and economic impacts from the Trump presidency are already affecting the markets. And at the same time, we have the ceasefire, the Israeli-Hamas ceasefire, which is easing tensions in the Red Sea, potentially impacting fleet utilization and the market dynamics. If I were to name just the top three aspects that come always at the top of the agenda whenever I'm having a conversation globally with any of the shipping executives, these are increasing requirements on decarbonization, the need for digitalization, and the shortage of the skilled workforce. These are usually the top three subjects that come top of any agenda. So with this background, we also have what we have ahead of us coming this spring during the MEPC 83. What we expect is the MEPC meeting, which is taking place in April, and we're expecting a global fuel standard and an economic measure, all with the aim to incentivize the reduction of greenhouse gas emissions. In fact, just this week, we have the intersessional working group taking place. It's the 18th intersessional working group, started actually yesterday, where we expect to see a number of developments that will actually pave the way for some of the really important decisions that will be made next April during the MEPC. To help us unpack some of these subjects, I'm joined today by three distinguished guests. We have Mark O'Neill, President and CEO of Columbia Group and former President of Finger Manager, Peter Rottenberg, CEO of Peter Maritime Ship Management, and Spiros Vlassopoulos, Managing Director of Ionic. Mr. Cha apologizes, he had an emergency and he's not able to join us in the panel. So we're actually having three panelists for this session. So having set a scene a little bit around what we currently have in terms of our environment, I'll turn to your views, to the views of the panelists, and ask my first question, which is, where, you know, within this background, with all of these uncertainties in mind, what do you see as the main challenges, and where do you see the opportunities? Spiro, I'll go to you first.
Thank you, Avi, and thank you, Nicholas and Polly, for the kind invitation to be participating in this year's Cyprus activities. Optimizing ship management in today's rapidly evolving maritime environment requires balancing multiple and sometimes conflicting priorities. I believe the key challenges in this landscape are, for example, the regulatory compliance the industry faces, as with increasing stringent international regulations aimed at reducing emissions and enhancing safety. Moreover, sustainability as decarbonization, two words we're all very familiar with and we've been talking throughout the day, has been focusing on the transition to alternative fuels. We heard earlier this morning about the ammonia, ethanol possibilities, and of course biofuels. But these involve high costs, and there are infrastructure gaps. And uncertainty about long-term viability. Additionally, carbon pricing and emission reporting adds another layer of confusion and complexity for shipowners. Meanwhile, new digital technologies such as AI, automation and remote monitoring, of course improve efficiency, but introduce cybersecurity risks with potential safety concerns that were non-existent 10, 20 years ago. Autonomous shipping, which we haven't heard much this morning, admittedly remains in its infancy, and regulatory bodies must balance safety with technological advancements. Now, onto the opportunities. I believe one of the biggest is the digital transformation and AI that has come into our day-to-day lives. For example, AI-powered predictive maintenance that we just heard about in the previous presentation can definitely enhance a vessel's efficiency, reduce the downtime, and of course optimize fuel consumptions. And likewise, blockchain and digital platforms improve supply chain transparency, and without a question of the doubt, reduce paperwork. Advancements also in energy efficiency technologies that we heard earlier this morning, such as wind-assisted propulsion and nanopaint technologies for hull paints, just to name a few, of course create competitive advantages. But to conclude, the future of ship management lies in embracing technological innovation, regulatory agility, and sustainable practices while ensuring that safety and operational resilience remain paramount. And companies that proactively integrate digital and green solutions will best be positioned for long-term success in this evolving future.
Thank you, Spiro. Now,
sorry, DTV, my style.
Thanks, Anthony, and thanks to Nicholas and everyone at Capital Link for giving us the opportunity to talk to you. At Capital Link last week, or the week before, I can't remember, one of the biggest challenges I saw was in formulating strategy in light of the Trump presidency and the fact that we just don't know what is coming. Pretty much every facet of our operations, and particularly in relation to renewables and alternative fuels, I think we have to find the intersect between ESG and drill, baby, drill. And whatever that intersect is, that acts as a filter to what our strategy must be. Because if you look at renewables, and if you look at some of these alternative fuels, how do they sit with America's stated intent? I think there was another statement today by the council being set up in the States to optimize on drilling, producing as much fossil fuels as possible. How much of this renewable effort and the whole sustainability drive will survive this renewed focus on states on fossil fuels? I think that's really, really important. And until we do that, we can't really formulate a strategy. ESG, with all of its different attributes, is and must stay. Of course, we all accept that. But we all have to accept that for the medium, long term, there is going to be a preponderance of fossil fuels. And the answer to that intersection, I personally believe, is technology. And it was touched on in some of the last panels. If we have the technology to carbon capture, if we have the technology to carbon strip, then you find that intersect, then the US can drill as much as it likes, then everybody else can drill as much as they like as well, and be also satisfying tick the ESG box, which of course is massively important to us and future generations. So I think technology will be the knight riding into the white knight riding in to save us in the forms of carbon stripping technology or carbon capture. Renewables will always be there on the periphery as well. Alternative fuels, and then I think Trump himself said he wants to give the people the choice. Do you want fossil fuels, clean fossil fuels, or do you want alternative fuels, which are all electricity? I stress test this with my daughter, who is an ardent green supporter, if you like, and I said, look, if the narrative changed, fossil fuels could be proven to be clean, would you stop these animals to your wars? Carbon fuels, of course, Daddy. Okay. The narrative has to change. And I think, as I said, that's the biggest challenge for us. It's finding that intercept.
Thank you, Mark. And Dieter?
I'm a bit surprised that we all only think about individual solutions, about our individual shipping companies and our individual ships, and how we can improve technologically, new buildings, or our assets. But we're not really talking about the industry at large. I think there are so many relatively low-hanging fruit for optimization, for increasing the efficiency of shipping, that we're not really touching upon. I think the presentation we just had on the AI is should be an eye-opener now. So we don't, I don't think we need AI to the extent that maybe we will have it in a few years' time, but I think ready today, big data would help to improve the operation of ships. If you consider how many tankers are still ballasting, how many bulk carriers are also ballasting around the world, if you think about how if we were to have a joint effort to increase the efficiency of the way we operate in terms of managing port congestion and so on. I think there's a lot to be had before we start investing heavily into ship automation. It is also forward decarbonization is important, and I will negate that, but I think there's a lot of opportunities to improve the way we operate already today with using data and AI.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing your perspectives. Now move on in terms of optimizing ship management, and I'll turn to you, Mark. First, you had said recently technology to enhance human intelligence. So that note, I wanted to ask you, what do you see as the three main drivers of ship management optimization?
Thanks, Adley. The first driver, I think, is people empowered by tech. And in that order, it's the technology, it's the tail which wags, it's not the dog, and it's really, really important. And I think when you look at people, you have to look at properly motivated and properly human resource managed people ashore and on board our vessels. We as an industry still lag woefully behind other sectors when it comes to proper human resource management of our seafarers or of our staff ashore. Technology helps to optimize, and there's some great tools, and we ourselves have fantastic tools to employ, but those will only ever enhance human performance, and that's really, really important. The second driver is focused scalability, and I'm a firm believer that ship management at scale in a focused, tailored, non-commoditized form is the answer and the remaining answer. For the foreseeable future, a one-stop shop that offers its clients all of the services that they might require. And I'm afraid the proposition that scale is not important, and that somehow the larger ship management companies lose focus the bigger they get, is just not sustainable if it is done properly and if it remains focused and the people are properly motivated. That's my first point. And the third point, I think, which drives ship management optimization, is treating ship management as a verb and not a noun. And that sounds a rather fatuous thing or obvious thing to say. My good friend Spiros, sitting at the end of this table, I remember when I was a young lawyer, and Spiros was a young executive working at Hellespont, and I looked at what they were doing in Hellespont on the owning side, and Spiros was very much involved on that, and he knew every nut and every bolt and every coil of rope on each and every one of the vessels. And that was ship management in a proper way, focusing on the verb there, actually managing the vessels and thinking about what we're doing. And, you know, I really do think the industry has to come away from ship management as a sector joining the dots to really looking at the verb itself, and you have to add value to the owner, you have to proceed exactly the same way that I'm sure Spiros does now at Ionic, and introduce human intelligence, not just artificial intelligence. And artificial intelligence is all very good, but artificial intelligence is completely pointless unless we have human intelligence as a starting point. So I think that's a really important driver of ship management optimization, really looking at the verb aspect and thinking about what we do as the first citizenship arrangement, and that's a secretary thing, where he does the same thing. This is not a commoditized service, it's a tailored service.
Thank you, Mark. Very interesting perspective. And I'll come back to you afterwards about the aspect of scalability in the measure. I'll go to Spiros now and talk more about the role of technology. So what is, if we take a look more closely at the role of technology and how it is supporting your operations. I know Ionic places great emphasis in terms of safety, and its mission is to operate in zero accidents and zero speeds. How is your company using digital solutions to support safe operations? Do you see any opportunities to develop, or are you using digital solutions beyond safe?
Thank you, okay. I'm thanking you for those words. I think safety is a core to everything we do. Everyone in this room would like to be associated with safety. Our mission has always been to operate with zero accidents and zero spills. And this is reinforced by the adoption of advanced digital solutions that help us all day by day. Coming back to your question, I've written down a couple of things of what we as a company have implemented on that technological side, go through it, and how they have assisted us over the last months and years. Firstly, a company called Orca AI has been put in practice on our tanker fleet today, which is essentially an advanced situational awareness system that assists bridge teams in navigating congested waters by providing real-time alerts and AI-driven decisions. The idea and the hope is that this will significantly reduce the risk of collisions in congested waters and enhances the overall bridge navigation awareness. Moving on, we've implemented electronic logbooks on board all our fleet, which not only improves the compliance and the regulatory requirements that we have to want to keep up with month by month, year by year, but also eliminates manual errors and reduces administrative burden to our crew. This enhances accuracy in reporting and ensures the vital transparency throughout our operations. And this can be seen to third parties as well. Similarly, voyage optimization software, we heard about it earlier today, helps us in enhance fuel efficiency and minimizes the environmental impact by selecting the safest and the most efficient route based on real-time weather data and vessel performance metrics. Yeah. Passage planning software is something that sounds very basic, but again, the new electronic publications which make it easier to the seafarer on board to prepare for an upcoming voyage. Of course, we all have our ERP systems. We use a company called Delos, which, without a question, without streamlines the processes across the fleet management and procurement and maintenance, ensuring smooth coordination and minimizing risks associated with human error or even miscommunication. And safety data analytics. This is something that we're lately focusing on. We have developed in-house data visualization platforms with the use of systems such as Power BI, which primarily is used to analyze historical data and transform this data from multiple sources into actionable insights, identifying trends and potential risks. And of course, this is shared to the fleet, shared to our seafarers on board, and it helps the collaboration between ship and shore. Beyond safety, of course, we also have committed to several systems, such as the Speak Up whistleblowing platform, which provides our seafarers the secure and confidential channel to report any concerns regarding safety, ethics, or compliance. This sounds, again, basic, but incorporating such systems that have been worked and have been used on board
many ships, actually one can see the benefits therein. And it ensures at the end of the day potential risks to be identified and addressed properly. We have launched crew applications, which are platforms that provide seafarers easy access and important documents, including training records and even payroll details and company updates. This enhances communication and ensures the crew are close to us. And of course, we touch a little bit about the training, how e-learn training platforms are becoming more and more advanced and provide our seafarers the ability to be trained wherever they are and whenever they want. Among a vast number of courses.
Thank you. Thank you, Spiel. I stay on the subject of safety, but extend also in terms of investment in talent. So I'll turn to you, Peter, and ask you, if you're managing a very diverse fleet, including also some specialized vessels, and safety is of paramount importance within your company. This requires investment in talent and a strong safety culture. How is this fostered within your company? As a large company that has recently been formed following the merger of Intership Navigation and Inter-Oriented Management, and as you grow your managed fleet, how do you incorporate new talent into your safety program? What training and education is in place?
Yeah, thank you, Aziz. I want to pick on the word phrase Mark just used, the human intelligence, and I fully at heart will actually agree with you. Before we have AI, we need to have HR, we need to have human intelligence. And this is also where the link is to safety and to safety concerns. I think the issue with safety is that it is, legislation is never enough for safe operations. The safety concept is not universally aligned. If you take road traffic, for example, in Europe towards Northern Europe, you will see that most 99% probably of all motorbike riders will wear a helmet. Car drivers on the roads in Northern Europe will stop at a red light, even if it's only a pedestrian. Coming to Cyprus, you will see that stakes are already slightly different. People will wear a helmet, but on the elbows, maybe in the back of the bike. Car drivers feel that maybe it's already safe to go over the red light after the pedestrian has passed. And if you then go further east or further south, you will see that safety concept is completely different. People take risks that we wouldn't consider worth taking. So if we are living in as a shipping industry, we are an international business. We are living in an internationalized world, and we also recruit our seafarers from around the world. So we're dealing with a lot of different approaches to safety. Of course, we as Europeans, we would like our safety standards also to be applicable, not only because we're Europeans, but we feel this is right. So you have to develop a safety culture within your company that will take everybody with it, and which will make it feel wrong to do wrong. Essentially, people that come on board your ships will tell you that you expect them to do. And to do so, this is not something, as I said, it comes only by regulation. It's something that you develop over time. We have, within our company, for the last 30 odd years, we have a training center in Manila. Where we do practical training, we do also classroom training, training on all of the risk simulators to foster the safety aspect and to train people on shore. But of course, that's not that will never be enough. That will never be enough. The main effort has to be on board where the seafarers are exposed to potential risks and potential hazards. And so we do a lot of training also on board of our vessels. We are part of the Shell Partners in Safety. So the last 15 years, we are very strong supporters of the International Tanker Operator Safety Forum, which, by the way, is holding its 170th meeting next week in Limassol with the support of Tender Maritime as well, of the Viper Operator Forum. So we are using a lot of industry fora to exchange experiences and to discuss safety and how we also can improve on safety. I think that's the pivotal point is there should be no competition over safety.
Yeah.
It's something that we all need to work on together. We have a good exchange here in Cyprus between companies, and safety is non-negotiable. It should not be something that anybody will fight by passing ships. Yeah, I believe that. I could think about talking about what we do there. I think
thank you, Dieter. We come back to the subject of training as it relates also to what we have ahead of us in terms of the decarbonization of our
town.
I'll pick up on the point that Mark mentioned before about scalability. And I guess my question will be around risk management and scalability. At what point does big become too big in terms of vessels under management?
Yes, when does big become too big? I mean, I think to look at this in terms of numbers is completely and the wrong way. To look at it, there's no reason why a ship management company that is managing 700 vessels cannot manage those vessels better than a company that's managing 20 or 5 or 10, providing there is focus and providing that scalability is harnessed accordingly. All of these things that Spiros and Dieter were talking about cost an immense amount of money. I mean, the optimization tools that Spiros has, I'll come back to those in a minute, we have through our partner OneLink, all of those optimizations, huge investment has gone in. And that's not the sort of investment that a smaller owner or operator can or would expect to do. So therein lies an opportunity on scalability, where because of the number of vessels, you can scale up and you can spread the cost over the year. So I think, you know, too big can be 100, it can be 300, it can be 500, it can be 10. If you lose that focus, big is beautiful in the sense that it allows you to scale and the graph is linear. So if you look at procurement, if you look at all of these good services that you can provide on crew care, on training, on e-learning, on optimization tools, etc., even it comes possible, and it's amazing what we can do when we have that scale and we have that power to invest.
Thank you. Thank you, Mark. And I would like to broaden the conversation a little bit around, you know, crewing and safety and think about what you mentioned before about what we have ahead of us in terms of the decarbonization roadmap. As the industry pivots away from the traditional fuels that we're now used, and we start looking in terms of alternative fuels being implemented in the industry, as well as technologies, new technologies being implemented, as we get closer to 2030, the impact on crew will be significant. A Maritime Just Transition Task Force report demonstrated that we're talking about 450,000 seafarers that will require some additional training by 2030. In fact, the number is even higher. It's about 800,000 seafarers when we think about the mid-2030s, if we are to assume an immediate ramp-up of alternative fuels. So with this in mind, I'll go back to you, Dieter, and what we said before around trading and the investment. How's your company approaching this challenge? What steps are you taking to introduce your crew to the impacts of handling essential fuels? Do you believe that larger companies will be at an advantage when it comes to crew upskilling and retention?
Yeah, we are in the fortunate situation that we have a number of owners who have invested in the past in new technology and new fuel propulsion as well. So we have ships, fuel management, I think we're under crew management. Which are fueled by LNG, by ethane, LPG propulsion, and soon also ammonia vessels. So we are actually in a position that we can train particularly engineers on board our vessels by adding positions, having direct positions on the ships. And we also take, we also do training on shore in our training center in the Philippines and on LNG engines in the Philippines. And we actually also operate a power plant in Jamaica, which we're using for training there, which is on LNG 6.5 megawatt engine. And so we do have at least the good individual, and we are ready to move, and we are doing training as we speak. My challenge, to be honest, is that we train, and at this point in time, we don't have enough opportunities to employ the staff as well. And then you end up losing them either ship poaching or because we don't have the opportunity to employ them. So it's a chicken and egg situation. The Mark just mentioned that it's expensive. Training is an expensive part of what we do. And not all our owners are willing to pay for it. So we as ship managers are shouldering a substantial part of the cost in there. It should be an industry effort, and ideally we should all be working together. I realize that this is the easier said than done.
Yes.
Can I just add on training? I mean, I think let's not look at it as something negative. It's a great opportunity, and one can make and should make and is entitled to make a good profit from training. We run a number of very, very good training centers in Philippines and elsewhere. That are profit making and will train sufficient numbers of crews in these alternative fuels as a leader. If I'm right, and the intersection between ESG and drill baby drill is that we will be using fossil fuels at stricter carbon capture for the foreseeable future, it is likely that this process will be manageable. It's not suddenly if you're going to shout for hundreds of thousands of crew members, we need to be trained on ammonia or methanol. There will be a few vessels in specified trades, in specified regions that are running on alternative fuels. I think the vast majority will be running on fossil fuels that produce carbon.
Thanks, Mark. And staying on the subject of fuel transition, but also as it relates to our workforce, I'll go to you, Spiros, and ask the question, how can the fuel transition be used to encourage young people to consider a career at sea? Are there opportunities to use the digital and technological transitions as a way to showcase shipping as a dynamic and forward-thinking industry that is appealing to the next generation of workers?
Thank you, Andy. You know, admittedly, thinking about this question, I was thinking about it last night, and admittedly, showcasing the digitalization and technology within the shipping industry should be done anyway, irrespective of fuel transition. As I see it, the fuel transition discussion gives the industry ammunition to further advertise the technological advances to the world and the future workforce. As the new exotic fuels by nature require more sophisticated hardware, technologies, and telemetries. In today's PlayStation era, or is that outdated in particular, the younger generation are more adept to new technologies, and in fact, probably do not know the knowledge or experience of the older traditional systems found on board conventional ships. As I mentioned earlier, IONIQ sees it important to concentrate on the different tools focusing on optimization, such as weather routine and voyage optimization, etc., to make us more efficient. And to conclude, by positioning the maritime industry as a leader in both sustainability and technology, which that's exactly what I'm here, that's what we're trying to enforce, I honestly believe it can attract a new generation that values purpose-driven work, innovation, and career flexibility. Thank you.
Thank you, Spiro. And just to conclude on a commercial note, Mark, you mentioned a little bit before, but I'll close with this question. So what's the best model, a tailored or commoditized service?
Well, I've always And I think day one in Colombia said that in order for us to succeed, we have to be relevant and compelling. And those are two qualities that we have to demonstrate to the client. We then moved to a position where we didn't want to mention the words third-party ship management anymore, because we felt that those were an anachronism, that too much distance between the owner and the ship manager. And the owner doesn't want to divest him or herself from the vessel. They want a service provider to do some of the things that they would otherwise do, but in a much closer relationship than traditional third-party ship management offered when it stood as a bespoke sector. This comes back to my verb, not a noun. And we have to manage ships in the same way and with a close partnership with our clients. And to give a good service, we have to give the client what he or she wants at a price he or she wants. If we do that, that's the intersection. Not a commoditized service, not a standard price, but what that client particularly wants. It has to be a tailored service, and it's very much a mix and match. So we're not third-party ship managers. We're not even second-party ship managers. We are integrated maritime logistics, energy and leisure services platform that works in partnership with owners and operators to give them what they want at a price they want. And that's got to be where we are as a sector, you know, kind of defeating that word set, but as a service provider. So long answer to your question, certainly not commoditized, certainly tailored, and real focus on partnership, becoming much, much closer to the operator owner, him or herself.
Thank you, Mark. Partnership. Thank you, Wes. I'll go then, Jane.
It's one, but one comment I want to mention. How I could just be out of this. I take the view that from any shipping company, it's very wise for all departments, whether you're the chartering department, the accounts department, the operation department, the trainer, fixture, whatever, that each member of a disciplinary of the management company should have some even limited seagoing experience, just to get the smell of the bottom of the salt water and the steel plates, the kind of the rust, whatever, because that always gives them a different dimension to how they handle the ships and when they're actually operating. Now, basically, also the aspect of which you mentioned before about emotional intelligence and artificial intelligence, I feel that most shipowning companies, especially your traditional shipowning companies, will not achieve what they achieved without emotional intelligence. I mean, the likes of someone like Panagiotis Tsakos, and the idea of, so I mentioned that name, which is an example of this, what they have pretty badly here, that you wouldn't have achieved what he achieved without having that emotional, that passionate approach with his emotional intelligence to make decisions, and starting from a very mediocre background and building up the fleet which you built. I think artificial intelligence comes in not to substitute emotional intelligence, but to supplement it. Would you agree with that?
No, I agree, and my point on human intelligence, George, before artificial intelligence was to suggest that sometimes in the past people involved in the third-party ship management sector viewed it very much as a joining of the dots and a commoditized service where to succeed these days we have to really chase problems, we have to get inside the owner's head, we have to think about these vessels as though they're our vessels. And what would we do? Every pound, every dollar that comes out of the vessel's budget comes out of our, should we should think, comes out of our pocket. And if we do that and get inside the owner's head, then we're showing human intelligence. And that's what we keep banging on internally to our staff as well. You've really got to manage. You've got to manage these vessels. You've got to show that human intelligence. We feel that you're part of the ownership team. So not to suggest that the previous operators didn't have human intelligence, as they did. So, as you mentioned.
To subscribe to most of what Mark just said, I think emotion intelligence, human intelligence was key to the development of many shipping companies, probably more so in the past than it is nowadays. There's a lot of analytics nowadays. It used to be it was much more a gut feeling industry in the past when you made the decisions or quick decisions without having analyzed it way too much. But you're concerned about having staff in the ship management, ship owning companies that have not been to sea. Well, I mean, obviously, it's nice to have as many as possible having some experience in that. And certainly there are positions where you would not want to have worked in the office that I'm not just seafarers training, but I mean, I think there's also a lot of opportunities for non-seafaring staff to join ship management companies, and I would encourage everybody to look at this as job opportunities as well, even if you don't want to go to sea. So I don't think it's a necessity per se. I mean, to come back to your question, I agree with what Mark said. I mean, it's obviously we need to be relevant to our clients and what we do to our partners. Partnership is a key word. And I think, you know, unless we add value to what the ship owners need, but to the ship owners' operations, we are not there.
Thank you. We're almost at the end of our panel session. It's been a great discussion. These are times of great change with different priorities, opportunities, and drivers compared to all the previous years. Some of the key takeaways that I have from this session: ship management as a verb, not a noun. Thank you, Mark, for this perspective. Amplifying the importance of the top-down safety. Partnerships, we need to work together, and safety is non-negotiable. Thank you to each of our incredible panelists. Mark, thank you.